Hello, good morning, and welcome to Line 1, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. Today on Line 1, we will be discussing some important topics like barriers to healthcare, health equity, and resources available in Alaska to provide access to healthcare for those who cannot afford it. Consensus around definitions for an issue such as health equity can help bridge divides and foster productive dialogue among diverse stakeholder groups. But conversely, a lack of clarity can lead to detours and pose a barrier to effective engagement and action. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation provides the following definition. Health equity means that everyone has a fair and just opportunity to be as healthy as possible. This requires removing obstacles to health, such as poverty, discrimination, and their consequences, including powerlessness and lack of access to good jobs with fair pay, quality education, and housing, safe environments, and healthcare. In Alaska, there are many barriers to healthcare, including high costs, limited specialists, long wait lists, and language barriers. This can lead to a growing health disparity in our community. Anchorage Project Access assists Alaskans by helping uninsured patients with a medical and dental need access up to 42 specialties encompassing 900 providers who donate health care to individuals with limited financial resources and without health insurance. I'm joined today by Dr. Philip Mendoza and Melinda Freeman from Anchorage Project Access. You can also be a part of our conversation. If you have a question or a comment, call us toll-free statewide, 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. Or you can email us at line1, spelled out, at alaskapublic.org. Dr. Mendoza and Ms. Freeman, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. I want to start with you, Dr. Mendoza. If you could do a little introduction for our group, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you, you know, maybe came to Alaska, what do you do here, and then, you know, how you got involved in this wonderful project.
Sure. Well, I'm first-generation Mexican-American. My family immigrated in the 70s from northern Mexico, and I was the first one born in Denver, Colorado. I had the chance to study in Colorado, the first one to go to college, first one to go to medical school in my family. And I started my career in the Northwest. So I've worked in Washington, Idaho, Colorado, now Alaska. I came up to Alaska looking for adventure. I love to hunt and fish and outdoor activities, and I took on the role of the chief medical officer at Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center. I've dedicated my professional career to addressing health disparities, and so I've always worked at community health centers since I started residency in 2007. And so I came up to Alaska and worked at as the chief medical officer up until about 3 years ago now, and I was burned out, and so I kind of stepped back from that role and have been focusing on patient care activities and advocacy. And so I was able to partner with Anchorage Project Access about 2 years ago. I joined the board, and so I enjoy that work and have been practicing part-time and then doing some community building and advocacy work.
Good. Sounds a very fulfilling lifestyle for that. And Ms. Freeman, please introduce yourself to our listeners and let us know what your role is.
Okay, thank you. As Justin Clark said, my name is Melinda Freeman, and I'm the executive director of Anchorage Project Access. And I've been in Alaska a little over 40 years now, and I have overseen and managed projects and programs that assist people who are underserved and often don't have a voice in the services they need. So I've been the director of the Salvation Army Clitheroe Center. I've been the supportive housing director at Rural CAP. And prior to coming over to Anchorage Project Access, I was the director of the Anchorage Health Department. I'm in my fifth year of Anchorage Project Access, and we have a very passionate team to serve our mission of helping people access healthcare.
Great. Well, thank you for what you do and providing this great service here. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, the definitions and health equity and social determinants of health. But before we do that, I do want to frame our discussion with just what Anchorage Project Access is and a little bit about the history of Anchorage Project Access. So let's see, who wants to go first with the history of Anchorage Project
Access? I'll take that. Thank you. Anchorage Project Access is a nonprofit program under the umbrella of Christian Health Associates. And in the late 90s, the Anchorage Access to Healthcare Coalition expressed their concern about access to healthcare. And this is, of course, prior to ACA Marketplace Health Insurance and the expansion of Medicaid. And Christian Health Associates applied for the grant to develop a program that recruits volunteer specialty providers to provide donated care to individuals with limited income and without health insurance. And our program started in 2005, so the past 17 years we have been expanding on that to include 42 specialties that donate their care. People are referred to us by primary care providers, and one of the primary reasons we were started is to reduce the overutilization of emergency departments. When people have no resources or they have a limited understanding of how to access health care, they go to the emergency department, and usually their health care issue is progressed to a great degree, where if people were served in primary care health homes, that would reduce the overutilization of emergency departments. We also work on the continuity of care issue for patients. When you go to the emergency department, often you are unable to continue working with the people that provided care. And that was a concern for our community. So at the beginning, we recruited over 250 physicians to donate their care. And when I say 42 specialties, I mean oncology care, orthopedic surgery, radiology, physical therapy, you name it. We have donating providers that provide it. In 2016, there was a great concern about people accessing dental health care. When you are worried about making ends meet, paying for your utilities, your rent, your gas, etc., dental care often is at the back of the back burner. And so we started our dental program, and currently we have 92 dentists donating their care in Anchorage. We use a pay-it-forward model where the individuals receiving dental care are asked to donate services in the community, from taking their grandmother to the doctor to doing child care at their church or synagogue. And when they do the donated care, the dental providers provide their care. So it's a really wonderful holistic program.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting way to do it too. It's not, it's really getting them involved as well or giving back too. So I think it's a positive feedback mm-hmm. cycle.
It's very, very positive. In addition to that, when ACA Marketplace was established in 2014 in the Medicaid expansion in Alaska, we have trained health navigators to ensure that our patients, once they've received their donated care, are able to enroll in health insurance that's affordable, and then they can continue on with their primary care and preventive care.
Absolutely. So with that great history, thank you, Melinda. Dr. Mendoza, let's talk a little bit about health equity and sort of, I kind of framed a little bit about the definition of it from the websites and stuff, but let's talk about Alaska. Like, what is health equity in Alaska to you, and why is it so important?
Yeah, my background, I've seen and experienced racism in medicine and in personal life. I've seen people have to go without care, and I continue to see that on a daily basis. And we know that we live in an environment and in a country that has a history of structural violence. And so trying to overcome the obstacles, the barriers, it takes an equitable approach, not equal. And so equal and equitable are definitely different terms, and we can talk a little bit more about that. It's professionally rewarding and fulfilling to be able to address the whole person, their whole needs, their social needs, their medical needs, knowing how big of a part of a person's life expectancy and health status is affected by these social determinants of health. And so It's not a distraction. It's not a burden on me to address those or to link. I know that as a physician, as a MD, I don't have all the tools at my disposal. So I lean on my team, on my community, to be able to address those needs. But I take the time to link patients and to share the resource, knowing how big of an impact it has on health status and life expectancy, these social determinants. We know that in Alaska, uninsured rates range between 10 and 29%, and it's not the same across the board. Your background and race factors into that. So it's estimated the Commonwealth Fund, I got these statistics from there, so about 10% of the uninsured population is white, about 29.3% Latinx or Latin. And then we don't have statistics on all the patient populations. We just have a small data set to work with. But that kind of gives a snapshot of, you know, that we still are dealing with a lot of folks that are uninsured, and it's not the same across the board. There's certain communities that are affected disproportionately. And that's where this idea of health equity comes into play, where targeted outreach, targeted intervention, knowing that there's inequities across our community, can really help overcome it. And it's really needed that equal won't get the job done, that we need, you know, different resources for different populations. One analogy and visual is, so if you can imagine two young people walking up to a fence and they want to see, look over the fence to watch the baseball game. And the two children have different backgrounds and they're of different heights. And as they're approaching the fence, if they were to need a box to stand on to look over the fence, they might need different boxes to stand on so that they can both peer over the fence and enjoy the baseball game. So that's one analogy. And the Robert Wood Janssen Foundation also has a nice infographic of a bicycle. So if, you know, if we have 10 people and across the spectrum of life that want to ride a bicycle, they won't all need the same bicycle. You know, if they have a disability, if their function and ability is different or their background, they might need a different bicycle to be able to go out for a ride. Not everybody needs the same bicycle will not fit all needs. Mm-hmm. And so those are a few kind of examples. And one quote that I like to use in describing what health equity can look like or feel like is from Edward M. Kennedy. So Edward M. Kennedy is a founding father of the community health center movement. And he once said, every American should have the opportunity to receive a quality education, a job that respects their dignity and promotes their safety, and health care that does not condemn those whose health is impaired to a lifetime of poverty and lost opportunity. So when I think of health equity, I think of that quote and what we can do to intervene and prevent the cycle of sickness and poverty and prevent people from suffering a lifetime of poverty and lost opportunity.
Oh, thank you for that. That really does help me kind of understand health equity and the difference, as you put it, between equal and equitable is not the same. So it is different based on your background or your resources. So I want to make sure I give my listeners here the numbers again. Please, if you have a call or if you have a question, please give us a call at statewide 888-353-5752. Again, that's 888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. Or email me, line1@alaskapublic.org. So we mentioned in that discussion about social determinants of health. And I can tell you very clearly, like when I went through medical school, you know, that there was no social determinants of health. I mean, that wasn't a term that I learned back in my school. Now I'm dating myself maybe a little bit, but I think looking at the students that I work with through our office that rotate through, it's definitely something that I'm learning and hearing about now. So I think it is getting out there. But let's talk a little bit about the social determinants of health and how they do affect someone's either access to healthcare or just the healthcare in general. So Let's see, who wants to start with this one?
Sure.
Melinda, so the social determinants of health.
Yes, I'd like to talk about our wonderful patient, Teresa, who has given us full permission to tell her story. It's in our annual report and on our website at anchorageprojectaccess.org. Teresa is a single mom. She continues to work in the hairstylist industry business. She's a very hard worker, and she prefers to be the giver rather than the receiver. So Teresa, in her late 40s, came to Anchorage Project Access as a referral for a hysterectomy. She had severe anemia, and she had an allergic reaction to the medications that were given to her. Her referral came to us from Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center, and Teresa wasn't sure she was going to make it to be able to continue to raise her wonderful daughter. Teresa has always earned enough money to take care of her family, but she doesn't have enough resources to purchase health insurance, and she had no idea how to navigate the complex systems of care that are involved in health insurance, accessing specialty care, accessing primary care. So with referral from ANHC, she came to us for a hysterectomy. She made just a little bit too much money to qualify for Medicaid, but not enough to purchase health insurance. We were able to give with a wonderful donating surgeon, provided the surgery, and she says that she is now able to live the life she had hoped to live for many years. Her family was extremely concerned about her, and this year we just enrolled her in ACA Marketplace Health Insurance that is affordable to her. But it's important to note that even though she enrolled in health insurance, the premiums can be modest, but the deductions can be very expensive. And so when that deductible is due, when you need to access health care and you don't have the resources, it continues to be a problem for people. So when you look at her social determinants of health, hardworking individual, works full-time, unable to purchase health insurance, but now she's able to access this care now that she's had the donated surgery. So the social determinants of health are related to the safety of where one lives, their access to health care, access to education, access to child care, transportation, and especially language barriers. I know that most of us have difficulty interpreting our explanation of benefits. I often think, I don't even remember going to see that provider, and the bill comes months late. And so our patients, we assist them in applying for financial assistance with both of our major hospitals, and we connect them to resources if we are unable to help them.
Okay, great. And Dr. Mendoza, any comments or piggyback on social determinants of health? Sort of obviously the things that I think about are someone's housing, someone's education or access to good education, good jobs. These are things that then can translate hopefully into the ability to purchase coverage. Please, I'd love to hear your comments on social determinants of health.
Sure. These factors that influence health status and life expectancy, that are grouped together as the social determinants of health, are estimated to impact health status and life expectancy about 30%, so as far as contributing factors. 40%. Yeah. And then 30% are attributed to healthy habits, 20% attributed to medical care, access to that medical care, and then 10% the environment in which we find ourselves. And so thinking of all those different factors and levers that can affect a person's life expectancy and health status, the social determinants can influence that 40%. So it's a big factor, right?
Yeah.
Thinking of the medical care that you and I provided, that's only 20% that impacts, it's still extremely valuable and necessary, but it just speaks to how important these factors are and how we need to think of medical care as a continuum. Thinking of our educational partners, people that work in the field of social work or housing. So, all the disciplines. I'm really impressed by education nowadays and the interprofessional, development and the classes, the coursework where multiple professionals work together, And I think that's going to lend to addressing all of these different factors that affect a person's overall life expectancy and health status.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you. You are listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. If you have a question or a comment for our guest today, give us a call statewide, 1-888-353-5752, 888-353-5752, or in Anchorage, 907-550-8433, 907-550-8433. After the short break, we'll continue our discussion on Anchorage Project Access with Dr. Philip Mendoza and Melinda Freeman.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line 1 on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you've got Medicaid, make sure Medicaid has got you too by keeping your contact information up to date. Visit medicaidrenewals.alaska.gov to use the new online form to quickly update your contact information without waiting. A current mailing address, phone number, and email address is needed to avoid delays in healthcare coverage. Plan to stay covered by visiting medicaidrenewals.alaska.gov for information and resources. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined today by Dr. Philip Mendoza and Melinda Freeman from Anchorage Project Access. If you have a question or a comment, call us toll-free statewide at 888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433, or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. We have a call coming in here. Dr. Foreman from Wasilla, welcome to Line 1.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome. What can we answer for you today?
So I'm the chief medical officer at Sunshine Community Health Center, which is a community health center based in Talkeetna and Willow. And I have in my personal practice a lot of Medicare patients, and I have a lot of Medicare patients from much further than our immediate region, simply because, as is widely known, access to healthcare by Medicare patients is very limited in that a lot of providers, primary care providers, do not accept Medicare. And one of the greatest things that came out of the pandemic was the proliferation of telehealth. And this has not only helped prevent spread of infection, which was the immediate intent of developing telehealth, but it has improved access to people both based on distance and physical disability. We have a lot of remote living people who transportation is a challenge. Some people just don't have access to transportation who don't live remotely. And telehealth has been a wonderful tool for meeting a lot of people's needs. And the concern that I would like everybody to be aware of is with the end of the medical emergency declaration, CMS, which is the body that makes Medicare coverage decisions, has announced that they're going to roll back and not cover telehealth visits for medical purposes. They will still cover behavioral health, but not medical purposes as of December 31st, 2024, which means a huge number of people are going to have great reduction to access to care. And one of the projects I'm working on is creating some letters for information for people to write their own letters, but I would like to spread the word so that people can write letters to their senators and congresswomen and maybe to any other influential organizations to lobby on this, because it is a huge, important need.
No, absolutely. Thank you, Dr. Foreman, for your comments. I agree with you from my practice perspective. Telehealth has greatly improved our ability to access or provide care for patients, particularly out of the Anchorage area. Dr. Mendoza, has any comments on Dr. Foreman's views here.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Foreman, for your insight and kind of promoting health equity. Yeah, there's a lot of lessons learned during the pandemic, and I would agree that telehealth is a great tool to improve access to care, and continuing that can maintain other things that, you know, I've been reading and just looking at, you know, possible policy changes that can help address health equity. And so targeted outreach and enrollment efforts, you know, we're doing that now and continuing to do that can help. There's a lot of folks that qualify for Medicaid, but they haven't enrolled. And, you know, being inquisitive, being humble about why that might be and what resources are necessary, bringing necessary stakeholders to the table that represent the community so that we can tackle enrollment issues. I know that Anchorage Project Access, that's a big part of what we do. And so many people are appreciative of that work and navigating our complex, expensive healthcare system.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your call, Dr. Foreman. Melinda, I want to piggyback on that a little bit. I know his call was specifically related to Medicare, but we are in the midst of a change with Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to give you a chance to kind of mention to our listeners what's going on with that re-enrollment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. During the public health emergency over these last 3 years of the pandemic, individuals and families who were enrolled in Medicaid were not required to reapply every year, which was the standard procedure. And so for these 3 years, they were automatically re-enrolled and they were able to access care as needed. Now that the public health emergency is being eliminated, individuals and families that are on Denali KidCare or Alaska Medicaid are strongly encouraged to contact the Medicaid office in order to reapply. One of the barriers to care that we've noticed for years at Anchorage Project Access is that when you have limited resources, often you have to move frequently because the rent goes up and you have to search for a different rental apartment or some other type of housing. So housing is a huge issue as an issue of barriers to healthcare. And so if individuals haven't received the letters or they haven't heard the PSAs on the Medicaid re-enrollment, we strongly encourage people that are on Medicaid to contact the Medicaid office so that they don't lose coverage. They may be earning more money than they were in the pandemic, and that might eliminate their ability to access Medicaid, and they will be encouraged to access the ACA Marketplace Health Insurance, and we help with all of those needs at APA.
Yeah, so that's a great next topic is, I know we talked a little bit about APA in general, the history of it, but let's talk a little bit specifically about what you guys do and the services offered. And I also wanna be cognizant that for our listeners that while your name is Anchorage Project Access, that's where the care is provided, but there are, you do provide resources for patients outside of the Anchorage area. It's just the care is provided in the Anchorage area. So I'll let you specify that.
Sure.
So I get it correctly.
Sure. The care that we provide coordinated care for individuals and families accessing specialty care. And as I mentioned before, oncology, orthopedic surgery, radiology, physical therapy, and dental. And this year we have developed and we're opening our pro bono counseling program in which individuals who need care hopefully can receive care via telehealth or in-person appointments. So we provide, when we receive a referral, we make sure that we review the referral carefully for the medical need, and then we make sure that we have a donating provider to match with that medical need. In addition to that, we coordinate all of the care for the specialty care, any transportation needs, any interpreter services, any housing referrals. We provide that connection. We also spend a great deal of time, as Dr. Mendoza mentioned, doing outreach in the community to help other healthcare providers or partners or education programs to understand what we do so that people know they can access our services. Outreach is a major part of what we do in our community. In addition to that, we help people understand how to advocate for themselves. Underserved populations, as I said earlier, often don't have a voice. They either don't have access to interpreters to express their healthcare concerns, and sometimes they use family members, and that can be a blessing and a challenge as well. So we help people navigate complex systems of care. We help them understand the vocabulary and terminology for health insurance, such as premiums, deductibles, copay, out-of-pocket, etc. One of our most important services is to help people apply for financial assistance at the hospitals in which they may receive the surgery. We do not charge anything for our services to assist people. If we can't assist someone, we make sure we connect the individual or family with services that they may qualify for. And then lastly, we ensure that they have health insurance as they move forward out of our system. We enroll people for 6-month periods at a time. We also provide limited medication assistance. If someone lives outside of Anchorage, we are able to provide the care here, and we've provided care and enrollment in health insurance from Fairbanks to Juneau and all parts in between. And we currently have very active dental programs and practices donating in the Valley and in Eagle River.
Okay, and as part of that, because the specialties aren't available in those areas, and is that why the care is generally provided in the Anchorage area, because that's where the providers are donating?
Yes, the donating providers have their practices in Anchorage, or they will provide telehealth, or they have sometimes satellite programs in Soldotna, in Matsu Valley, etc. We work closely with, when Dr. Foreman was talking about the Talkeetna Sunshine Clinic, we have Dr. William Franz on our dental committee. So we have experts in the field like Dr. Mendoza serving on our board, and they help strengthen our program to make sure that we're not missing any critical service for the population that we're serving.
Excellent. We have a call coming in from Anchorage. Bob, welcome to Line 1.
Thank you. Good show, and it sounds like a great program. I know it must have been growing based on the numbers you're reporting. But my question was, the general question is the attitude of federal healthcare financing agency. You've mentioned Medicaid, Medicare, toward programs like Project Access. And are they benign? Does the ACA take any measure or account of your program? And I know that in the past, Medicare has been a big issue, as you mentioned, but a lot of Medicare providers say they can't discount their services, or they have to do a most favored nation type program where everybody gets the same low rate. So I'm wondering specifically whether you have difficulty recruiting donated services on the basis of it interferes with other federal funding of healthcare. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. That's an interesting question, because Medicare is a federal program, and then the Medicaid is a state-run program, but a lot of the funding for those comes from the federal government, so it's very convoluted. So how does Anchorage Project Access navigate the funding of all of these, or I guess I'll pose that to you, Melinda. I'm not sure how to ask it exactly, but what's the relationship there?
The relationship, that's a great question. We assist individuals and families to apply for these services, and in order to qualify for our services, an individual or family has to be under 300% of the federal poverty level. So these are working individuals in Anchorage. Sometimes folks are working under the table, and so they aren't able to access services because of immigration issues, etc. And so we also receive funding to provide our services from the state of Alaska, from Alaska Regional Hospital, Providence Foundation, Providence Hospital, the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. So some of those programs and agencies receive federal funding. Our dental program is primarily supported by the Health Services Research Administration, or what's called HRSA, and that program funding for our dental program moves through the state of Alaska and over to Christian Health Associates and then over to Anchorage Project Access. So we need to We're very strong advocates of individuals and families accessing federal programs that will serve them, even as they are funneled or directed through the state of Alaska, such as the WIC program, public assistance, food assistance, housing assistance. Most of those are federal programs that are funded through the state of Alaska, but because we want people to have access to food security, housing, employment development, financial guidance and assistance. So we partner with federal and state programs to offer these services. But yes, it is a very complex process and not easily solved. It's pretty startling that we have the highest cost of health care in the world and the some of the poorest health in the world as well. So it's an ongoing issue. And Anchorage Project Access serves on about 8 task forces and committees addressing this overall issue of health equity and health care in Alaska. We want Alaskans to thrive and to be as healthy as possible.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. I think so the care that's provided, you guys help people get access should they qualify to government services, but should they not and they still need health care, that's where the donated health care comes in from providers and practices in the community. But then your institutional funding, because you have to have the jobs, the people that are required to do all this counseling, that comes through various funding models or state funding.
So. We have quite a bit of corporate donors from Moda Health to Premiera to Genentech and other. We seek funding in whatever way we can in addition to our annual fundraiser, but it is just really a powerful message to the community that in our 17 years, with the coordination of care and the recruitment and retention of donating providers, our wonderful healthcare partners have provided over $55.3 million in donated care through Anchorage Project Access. We have a health insurance company that donates the tracking and the recording of all the donated care.
Okay, excellent. We're going to take our second short break here. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. If you have a question or a comment for our guest today, call us statewide 1-888-353-5752, 888-353-5752, or in Anchorage at 907-550-8433, 907-550-8433. After the short break, we'll continue our discussion on Anchorage Project Access with Dr. Philip Mendoza and Melinda Freeman.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line 1 on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you've got Medicaid, make sure Medicaid has got you too by keeping your contact information up to date. Visit medicaidrenewals.alaska.gov to use the new online form to quickly update your contact information without waiting. A current mailing address, phone number, and email address is needed to avoid delays in healthcare coverage. Plan to stay covered by visiting medicaidrenewals.alaska.gov for information and resources. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Any other page?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined today by Dr. Philip Mendoza and Melinda Freeman from Anchorage Project Access. If you have a question or a comment, call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433, or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. So I want to go into a few final topics here with our last 20 minutes or so, and give you an opportunity to share some other examples that expound on what services are offered. But let me ask you, Dr. Mendoza, it sounds like you came to Anchorage Project Access here in the last couple of years as the president of the board. Like, how how was that during COVID-19? How did COVID-19 impact that or your ability to provide services through APA?
Yeah. Well, I think in several ways we saw the need, you know, patients needing to access care, and there was additional barriers, you know, as far as contact precautions and being separated from family members if during an episode of care, and just the additional stress that that placed on families. So I think Anchorage Project Access was such a valuable resource, continues to be such a valuable resource for the community post-pandemic, to be able to connect patients to care, help navigate the healthcare system. Specifically during the pandemic, I think what I saw and experienced was a lot of fear, a lot of misinformation, and adding that on top of a fragmented, expensive healthcare system, really brought forth the health disparities that we knew already existed. And, you know, there's some pretty sad statistics that, you know, reflect on our healthcare system and structural violence in a very clear way. So between 2019 and 2020, the life expectancy decreased by 3% for Latinx individuals. And so these are nationwide statistics, 3% for Latinx, 2.9% for Black Americans, and 1.2% for white people. And so that disparity, that gap, you know, in life expectancy, I think is a clear indicator of the failures in some ways of our healthcare system, and structural violence. You know, that it just, for me, demonstrates that that does exist, it still exists, and so our work continues to be very important.
Yeah. And, you know, in the vaccines and whatnot, our access to vaccines was federally funded and free for everybody, but that doesn't mean that different groups had equal access to the same vaccines. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that we can think about. How and Melinda, your take on the impact of COVID-19 for you guys? Did you guys see more people needing access to care, or did it prevent people from coming to you guys?
We held our steady course and continued to enroll several hundred people a year for care. And again, many people receive between 1 and 7 types of donated specialty care in their 1 enrollment period. So it's not just one type of service that a patient may receive. We saw, as Dr. Mendoza mentioned, quite a bit of fear. We were able to access federal funding to have an outreach program helping people understand the usefulness of vaccines and address vaccine hesitancy and testing. So we distributed hundreds and hundreds of test kits, at-home test kits, and masks through this federal funding. So that was very rewarding and helpful. And we spent a lot of time rescheduling donated appointments because someone would test positive. So we had to ensure that our wonderful donating healthcare partners were not exposed to COVID by one of our patients because they didn't have an access to a current test. And so those test results were conveyed to our providers as well to ensure the patients, the providers, and their teams were safe.
Excellent. Okay. So you mentioned before that you get referrals, like the patients come to you through a referral for medical need. So describe for me how someone gets your services. So it sounds like a referral needs to be sent, but can people also go or call you guys or go to the website? What is the access or how does someone access your services?
Sure. Well, anyone can call our office at 907-743-6600 or access our website to ask questions about their care. We have a multitude of random types of calls on any given day. For our dental program, an individual who's experiencing dental pain, doesn't have financial resources, and doesn't have health insurance can literally just call us, and we will go through a checklist to ask about their symptoms and then see if we can connect them to our – we have two primary care dental health homes. One is Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center, who has a very robust dental program, and now Matsu Health Services in the Valley. So individuals may call us. We receive referrals from specialists themselves that they want to donate to a particular patient who is uninsured. We'll process the patient through our fairly rigorous application process. We walk through every potential patient through the process of our paperwork. We require tax records if they have it from the last year, 90 days of bank statements, 90 days of pay stubs if those are available. We look at their entire household income to ensure that they are eligible for our program. And then we will make sure that we coordinate with the donating practices. It's very, very thorough, the screening, the eligibility, and then the coordination of care. It's a very thorough process.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So why do specialists donate their care to you guys? I'm going to pose this one first to Dr. Mendoza.
I was going to say, Dr. Mendoza is probably better.
He's the president of the board. So how do you get people to provide free care?
Alaska medical providers, specialty providers, primary care providers, they are a passionate, committed group of people and work hard. So we are able to leverage our program to make sure that those efforts are as efficient as possible by being that link and making sure whatever background medical history is needed for the specialist to review, we're that link, and so that the primary care provider and the specialist provider don't spend their time, you know, gathering documents, doing some of the background, connecting the patient. And so it makes for the best experience possible and the best use of time of both the specialty care provider and the primary care provider, so that they have a good experience of care when they participate in our program. And I think it's become a program where being a part of it, you know, you feel like you're a part of something bigger. You're contributing as a practice and this episode of care. But you're part of a bigger movement, a bigger community, to make sure that all Alaskans have an opportunity to lead a healthy, happy life.
Yeah, yeah. And Melinda, your take.
Yes, I think that the way it's been described to me by our many healthcare donating providers, from endocrinologists to oncologists, et cetera, is that it allows Anchorage Project Access, and donating their care allows them to practice medicine for the very reasons they became involved in medicine in the first place. It's very inspiring. They're passionate about the care, and they're very passionate about changing lives in a positive direction. So we're very, very grateful for our donating healthcare providers and our funders, and especially our patients that are willing to walk through this process to ensure that they qualify for the services. And we ask all of our patients to write thank you cards and thank you notes to our providers. And those thank you notes that we receive are very humbling and very meaningful.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's so easy to get involved in the business of medicine, in the practice, in the day-to-day, with especially covering all the high, you know, there's not just the cost of healthcare. I mean, the cost of even running a business in Alaska is higher, and all of the employees and everything. And so it's easy to get lost in that and forget sometimes, you know, the importance of the individual patient. So I can see where that would be extremely rewarding as well. Okay, let's before we have a few minutes here left, I just want to once again remind our callers, if you have a question here as we're closing up, 888-353-5752 in Anchorage, 907-550-8433, or email me, line1@alaskapublic.org. So, Melinda, with the expansion of the ACA, the marketplace, and the expansion of Medicaid over the last few years, like how has that impacted APA, or has it impacted Anchorage Project Access in providing services? It seems like that would be very helpful to people, So maybe you can explain like how, like why, I guess this, the blunt way of putting it is why are your services still needed?
Well, we were, you know, informally hoping, well, now we won't be needed anymore and we can kind of close up shop and go on to some other passion. But in fact, that hasn't occurred. We still have, you know, from anywhere from 50 to 85,000 people as of 2020 that were uninsured. And so where when we first started in the 2005 to 2014 period, we would have hundreds and hundreds of people that were receiving care. Now we don't have to double and triple that. We receive several hundred referrals a year, around 600, and we're able to enroll with provided care about 250 people, and we enroll about 350 to 450 people into health insurance plans. So it allowed APA to expand our services to make sure that we assist people with the donated specialty care they need, but then ensure that they enroll in health insurance. Every patient in any given year receives a letter during open enrollment for ACA Marketplace Health Insurance that they are required to apply for that that service or for Medicaid if they're eligible or Medicare, as we cannot carry them as long-term patients. It's short-term urgent care for an urgent need that is unable to be met by primary care. And so it did shift it, but fortunately or unfortunately, we are still needed and happy to provide the services, and especially the education services for patients.
Yeah, that seems like, I mean, the donated care, don't get me wrong, is amazing for someone that needs a much needed surgery, but just providing the counseling and ability to apply for funding, it's so complicated and time consuming. Mm-hmm. And it takes resources just in and of itself, you know, good access to internet and understanding all the terms. That sounds like that's a great service that's offered. I have an email from Cody who brings up an interesting question in my mind. So for someone, and he's asking specifically about dental questions, for someone that may need a dental implant due to trauma or disease. And this is a service that isn't covered by Medicaid because they consider it to be cosmetic. So are there resources available through your program for that? But two, like, what do you do for people that may have Medicaid or may have Medicare, but there are things that are not covered under those services? Would that fall under something you guys could cover?
Typically, we don't provide care that is considered by the medical community or a funder such as Medicaid, Medicare as elective. But in this case, with Cody's question, we aren't able to help individuals who currently have insurance. However, we do provide donated bridges and partials and other type of dental care where a person does not have the funds. We also connect people who are senior citizens and or disabled to the Dental Lifeline, which often has an extensive waiting list. We try to get people the services as quickly as possible. When you're in pain from a dental problem, it's very difficult to wait months for care. And so if an individual is uninsured, we can address bridges, partials, and dentures for an individual, but we don't receive donated care for dental implants.
Got it. Okay. And then let's spend our last few minutes here kind of dissecting a little bit about the barriers to Alaska and sort of what you guys see as potential remedies to those, you know, through your program or through advocacy towards government policies. But like, for one is the cost of healthcare in Alaska. Dr. Mendoza, obviously the costs up here are of premiums just to get private insurance is extremely high, especially for small businesses or small practices to provide that for employees. And many plans have, even if you can provide coverage, have extremely high deductibles. How does that impact the equity or the, I guess that's one of the social determinants of health is the cost of healthcare up here. I don't know if I have a specific question, actually. I'm just kind of rambling, but what are your thoughts on the cost of healthcare here in Alaska, and what can we do to sort of remedy that for your people?
Yeah, and definitely we have, I think, the highest cost of healthcare in in the United States, and you know what we're getting for that money, our outcomes data, they're not very good. And so I think as community members, as citizens, I think we should talk to our representatives, our healthcare leaders, and ask for more, right? For a better value. And so when you go shopping for a car, if you're going to pay the price of, you know, getting two Corvettes, then when you come to pick up, you don't want to have a 1973 Pinto that's beat up and the wheel is flat. And so essentially, we want to get, you know, what we're paying for. We want to have a high value service on the return end. And right now we're not getting that. So I would encourage folks to advocate for policy change, for things like, you know, the Commonwealth Fund has a list of best practices that, you know, have been proven in other countries that we can incorporate, you know, trying to make sure that access to care is available to all, and it's in regardless of where you live or what your background is. There are states that have allowed undocumented immigrants to enroll in Medicaid, so that's something that our state can consider. There's 12 states in the District of Columbia that have done that to remove barriers for undocumented immigrants. And one thing that I like to highlight from our program is that if their immigration status will not affect their eligibility to participate in the programs available at Anchorage Project Access, and we have interpretation services to help overcome language barriers. So I would encourage folks to, you know, to look at the Commonwealth Fund's website, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, to empower yourself with, you know, best practices so we can move forward and bring solutions to some of these wicked problems in our healthcare system of cost and access to care.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And Melinda here, we only have about a minute or so left, but I want to give you an opportunity to provide some closing thoughts to our listeners.
Well, thank you for this opportunity today. I think the encouragement I would share with our listeners is get involved. If you perceive that there's an issue and there's health equity, as I said, we are involved in the Healthy Alaskans 2030. We're on the advisory team, Healthcare and Homelessness Committee, 988 Crisis, Now Work Group. There are many avenues of helping this issue and helping to share our the resources with people who do not have access to those. You can access Anchorage Project Access via our website. You can get involved on a statewide level. We're working with the Alaska Children's Trust on the Medicaid Uninsured Rate Work Group. There are about 17,000 children that could be enrolled in Medicaid that are not. And so advocacy on a federal, state, and local level is very, very important to help move that needle on the compass to a greater health for all Alaskans. Thank you for this opportunity today.
You're very welcome. And so just one last time, for a doctor out there who's listening, or a provider or medical practitioner who may want to donate care, how would they do that?
They would just call us at 907-743-6600 or go to our website. We have a whole section for providers, a whole section for patients, and it's a really robust website to help explain how we do what we do.
Okay, great. Thank you. Special thanks to our guests for being with us today. Thank you to our audio engineer, Chris Hyde, and our producer, Madeline Rose. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. Let us know your thoughts or suggestions by emailing us at line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. Stay healthy, Alaska.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.